This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry today, and we thank you so much for listening. And yesterday was a rare day in Washington where everyone in town sits on the edge of their seats and waits for the word from an agency called the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO. It doesn't happen often, but it happened yesterday. Everyone waiting for the scrolls to be passed from the wonks down to the lawmakers, the reporters, the policymakers, the White House, everyone who cares about the passage of an Obamacare repeal and replacement. Now, the CBO said that 14 million more people would end up without insurance by next year than under current law. And in another decade, that number would go up to 24 million people, leaving an estimate of a total of 52 million people across the United States uninsured by 2026, compared with just 28 million who would lack coverage if Obamacare stayed as it is. Now, one bright spot for the GOP, the report estimated that $337 billion would go away from the deficit in that same time period, though that's not stopping prominent Republicans and White House officials from attacking the CBO. The White House dismissed the report, and Tom Price, the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, said he believes the CBO report is simply wrong. Reacting to that estimate of 14 million people more uninsured by 2018, here's what Tom Price had to say.
Well, the fact of the matter is, if you look at that, it's virtually impossible to have that number occur. You think about the numbers that the top line, that just the top line on CBO report today, it basically says that we'll be right back at pre-Obamacare status. We believe that the plan that we're putting in place is going to insure more individuals than currently are insured. So we think that CBO simply has it wrong.
Well, there's Tom Price, the new HHS secretary who spent a lot of years in Congress himself dealing with CBO reports. Here's Doug Elmendorf. He was the head of the CBO from 2009 to 2015 when Barack Obama was president, responding to that conversation with our Takeaway producers just yesterday.
Today, CBO's estimates are a much better guide to what would happen under this bill than any others that are available. So if the Congress proceeds by ignoring this information, that's only going to do damage to national policy and to our country. If the Congress concludes that saving that budgetary cost is worth 24 million Americans losing health insurance, they should say so and proceed. But they shouldn't proceed to push this legislation along while pretending it is not going to have the effects that CBO says.
And Doug Elmendorf also had this to say about a White House attacking his former agency for their bean counting ways.
People tend to complain about CBO when they find the information that CBO provides inconvenient. So this is not new for CBO to be criticized, although the volume of criticism now is particularly high. CBO provides objective, educated estimates.
Douglas Holtz-Aiken ran the CBO during the Bush years from 2003 until 2005 when some major healthcare legislation was passed. Doug, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you heard all the attacks there that I played from you from administration officials. You've heard them from Republicans in Congress, and you heard your colleague Doug Elmendorf talking about shooting the messenger here in Washington. What do you make of the Republican strategy? It's been going on for more than a week as they've set about the task of trying to discredit the CBO, because I guess they knew, for their political purposes anyway, they were going to get a pretty lousy score.
This is business as usual. I would echo what Doug Elmendorf said. CBO gets criticized all the time. And if you do the CBO job, you realize it's just part of going to work. And I don't put a lot of credence in it. CBO is central to the budget process. Their job was to score the bill, find out what happened to revenues, what happened to spending. They concluded that it saved $337 billion over the next 10 years. That means the bill is eligible to go forward in reconciliation. That was its primary job. And it did it very well.
So Tom Price says it's really impossible to estimate the number of uninsured. Paul Ryan says he's thrilled with the score, largely because of that deficit reduction you just mentioned. Senate Republicans say, in the words of Bill Cassidy, who's from Louisiana, that that was just an awful score. And Mick Mulvaney, the White House budget director, says it's not really worth the CBO's time to score it at all. Man, they are kicking around the football here.
Yeah, they are. And it's about the coverage numbers. But if you look inside those coverage numbers, you have basically a question of philosophy. The CBO says that if you pass this bill next year, there will be 6 million individuals in the individual market and 5 million Americans in Medicaid who will choose not to participate. They will not buy an insurance policy. They will not sign up for Medicaid, despite the fact that the premiums are the same, the subsidies are the same. The only thing that's changed is it's no longer illegal. And that's a question of how you feel about that. They had the option to buy it. They chose not to. Are they worse off or not? And that's the question of public policy that we're faced with. CBO simply put it on the table.
So, Doug Holtz-Aiken, we should say that you are a supporter of this American Healthcare Act, but you also don't have to run for anything or impress anyone. So let's get real here about some of the trade-offs that you just talked about. You mentioned balancing that $340 billion in deficit reduction with really, to many Americans, what's a huge increase in the overall number of uninsured. Those people have to be paid for eventually. They will show up at hospitals with no coverage. They will get on Medicaid with no coverage eventually. So talk a little bit more about the trade-offs from where you sit and why this is a good bill.
I think you have to make the comparisons to realistic futures. And it's not realistic to compare Medicaid to now. It's realistic to compare Medicaid to the reformed Medicaid that has to happen. It's inconceivable that the United States can continue to spend the money it's spending on Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, the Affordable Care Act in general, over even the next 8 years. If they do, we will have deficits that are over $1 trillion, and 60% of that will be interest on previous borrowing. So there's a fantasy future where we say, okay, let's compare Medicaid to an unreformed Medicaid, but whether you're a Republican or Democrat, Medicaid needs to be reformed. And I think that's the key, the fact that they got some reforms, they got some budgetary savings, that's what you have to focus on.
And as you turn the pages of this CBO score, Doug, there are some pretty shocking conclusions. Much higher premiums, in some cases 6 or 7 times higher than right now. For a low-income senior, a person 64 years old on $25,000 a year of income, where their premiums would go up, according to the CBO, like I said, 6 or 7 times. I mean, you have to talk about the trade-off there that makes it worth it. Does this bill envision keeping those people off the insurance rolls because they're so old, so sick, and really so expensive? Is that the point, to keep them away?
Of course it's not the point. And on average, premiums are estimated to be 10% lower by CBO. So there are clearly some changes in the subsidy rates. There's some changes in the premiums. The idea is to give everyone access to the option to buy insurance, but not to require them. That's a matter of the philosophy underneath the bill. I think if you go forward and you find points of distress, that there's an option to fix that. And that's the money that the bill envisions giving to the states. These patient and state stability funds are intended to reduce out-of-pocket costs for those individuals who have very high healthcare costs. They're envisioned to provide what are called high-risk pools for those kinds of individuals. So there are actually explicit considerations in the bill for those kinds of situations.
There was one thing that was buried in the numbers that a colleague of mine noticed on page 33, as a matter of fact. And we're going to get a little bit morbid here, because one thing that jumped out, CBO predicts a $3 billion reduction in Social Security outlays over 10 years. What does that mean? What explains why Social Security would spend $3 billion less?
I did not notice that in the score. And honestly, I'm going to go take a look at that page. It looks interesting.
It's interesting because lower Social Security spending over 10 years kind of suggests that people aren't alive as long and Social Security doesn't have to pay out to them, right?
That seems unlikely, because that would show up in the Medicare numbers as well, and I didn't see anything on that. Could be disability. I think, you know, without looking at it more carefully, I wouldn't speculate.
Okay, well, let's talk about your experience then. You were head of CBO from 2003 to 2005. There was a major healthcare reform at that time. They passed Medicare Part D, which is the prescription drug benefit for Medicare. It didn't exist before. The Bush administration decided they wanted to spend billions, tens, hundreds of billions of dollars over a decade to provide prescription drugs to seniors. How was your record? What did you estimate back at the time for the 10-year cost of this program, and has it panned out?
The cost was capped at $400 billion. They had decided that that would be how much budgetary resources they'd put toward the Part D program. We estimated that it would cost $395, a little bit underneath that. And it came in substantially below that, about 30% below, in fact. So it is one of the ironies of being in CBO, that you are most important when you know the least about what you're doing. The Medicare Part D program was a financial product. It covered seniors against the financial cost of outpatient prescription drugs. At that point, such product did not exist in nature. So we had to envision what private entities would participate, what premiums they would charge, what deals they would cut with the pharmaceutical manufacturers, what the federal government's subsidy to that would be, how many seniors would sign up. It was an enormous undertaking, and I think we did a very good job. And, you know, to be off by 30% is of course, looks terrible in retrospect, but at the time, it was a quite important and dramatic estimate to make. We had no real guidance. That's how it is at CBO.
Well, let's listen to Sean Spicer over at the White House, who would like to emphasize the wrongness of that 30%, not the rightness.
If you're looking to the CBO for accuracy, you're looking in the wrong place. I mean, they were way, way off last time in every aspect of how they scored and projected Obamacare. The idea that that's any kind of authority based on the track record that occurred last time is a little far-fetched.
Well, Douglas Holtz-Aiken, we've talked about the political imperatives that would drive this White House to just basically say, don't listen to the CBO. But the fact is, Republican senators are really backing away from this proposal now, and they're going to keep backing away based on what the CBO has said. You've seen lawmakers, when they get technical on programs like this, to try to get the votes. Do you have an expectation, based on what you're seeing and what the numbers are, what Republicans might try in order to find something that can get the votes to pass Congress now?
I don't know what they're going to do. I'll be honest about that. I'm not sure I agree with the conclusion that people are going to back away. But the fact is, the Republicans have a very tough path to getting this bill through the House and the Senate. That's the reality of governing. Republicans are now understanding they don't get to simply vote no because things aren't perfect. They have to vote yes for things that are highly imperfect. And in the view of everyone who votes yes for this bill, there are going to be things that are wrong with it that are on the list of things they'd like to do in the future and fix up. So I look forward to seeing how this debate evolves.
Well, repeal and replace is on the table, and this debate is far from finished. The CBO has weighed in, saying that 14 million fewer people would have insurance over the next couple of years. Douglas Holtz-Aiken has been in that position. He headed the CBO from 2003 until 2005. And Doug, we're really happy to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.